Welcome to the Industrial Talk Podcast with Scott McKenzie. Scott is a passionate industry professional dedicated to transferring cutting-edge, industry-focused innovations and trends while highlighting the men and women who keep the world moving. So put on your hard hat, grab your work boots, and let's go.
Hey there, welcome to the Industrial Talk Podcast. So glad that you are here. You are listening to the number one industrial-related podcast in the universe. That is my story. That is what I'm sticking to. And it is dedicated, this platform right here, the Industrial Talk platform, is dedicated to you, the industrial professionals, the companies that get it done. You're bold, you're brave, you innovate, you're changing the world. We celebrate you each and every day. Thank you very much for what you're doing, especially during these times. Great interview. Let's get going. We always have great interviews. Yeah. But before I get into that interview, I like barbecue chips. And instead of COVID-19, I think I'm shooting for about COVID-20 and beyond of weight gain. Man, do I like barbecue chips. And you know what else I like? Somebody mentioned this, a buddy of mine. Ham sandwiches. Ham sandwiches and barbecue chips. Not just any barbecue chips. The kettle kind. You know, the ones that are really crispy? Eh. I have no willpower right now. Normally I work out, but nope. I'm going for probably COVID-25 minimum. I still walk. I still do all this stuff. My dog is still getting tired, but it's still, man, I'm just telling you, I'm eating all the bad stuff. All right. Enough about that garbage, but I do like it. COVID-25. You want to compete with me? Make it happen. All right. We're going to be talking to a gentleman by the name of John Burnett. He is with an incredible company. You might have heard of them. Fluke. Yeah, I have. You might have. But he's with Fluke, and he is a certified maintenance reliability professional. He knows his stuff. And I'm telling you right now, where this conversation has to happen within your organization, you have to commit to developing your reliability program. Bottom line, period. It's proven. Bottom line value, savings, efficiencies, uptime, and especially with just this tremendous disruption that we are experiencing with this virus, this pandemic, this, everything else that is associated with this quarantining. You need to be thinking about that, and you need to be thinking about that today. And I know that in the past we've talked about, hey, we got to be a reliability-centric organization. We're going to be doing that, and then that dies out, and then things get in the way, and then it just sort of goes by the wayside. I'm telling you right now, if you want real bottom-line value, if you want real efficiencies, I mean, the people at Fluke, represented by John, Christian Silbernagel, all of them. The team is fantastic. You need to reach out to them. And they definitely want to help you. And they have the street cred to make it happen. And you know what? In our conversation with John, and you'll hear it, we talked about incrementalism. We talked about, tackling the low-hanging fruit. You don't have to say, oh, my gosh, my facility is just absolutely falling apart. Where do I start? You start by handling the incremental the challenges, the defect elimination, and then it just starts you getting wins, right? You're just starting to get some wins under your belt, and eventually you'll know that, oh my gosh, we're actually executing upon this particular objective to become a reliability-centered type of organization and committed to doing what is necessary to keep that asset up and running. All right. Enough with me yammering on. John Burnett is on tap to be able to begin discussing the what's happening at Fluke and how he lays out the strategy. If I look at his card, we're talking about how do we start and grow a doggone reliability program? How do we bridge the growth skill gap? I mean, it's now. It's really yesterday, but let's just say it's now. And why do teams keep replacing the same bearings and seals? Meaning, why? What's going on? Why is that gap happening? But anyway, we go through a litany of solutions that you need to, especially in this environment, begin to execute in your organization. All right, enough with me. Ladies and gentlemen, it's John Burnett. He doesn't come in with much fanfare, but he is amazing when it comes to reliability. Hey, John, welcome to the Industrial Talk Podcast. So glad that you are here. I know that you have a busy schedule and you're quarantined like everybody else. How you doing?
I'm doing great, Scott. Thanks a lot. Thanks for having me on.
Pacific Northwest, beautiful place.
It is gorgeous. And actually, today is sunny. It's been raining overcast for the past few days, but the sun's coming in, and we've had a mild winter, and looking forward to a great spring. So the flowers out here are going crazy, and they don't know that there's something weird going on in the world right now. So
yeah, my grass still grows even in the virus. It's not helping out with my yard at all.
That's right.
So surprising. It still grows. All right, for the listeners out there, John, give us a little background on where you came from and why you're such an incredible reliability professional.
Sure. Well, I think we'll start, 30 years ago, I started in the U.S. Navy. And so I started as a maintenance technician. And then I moved on to be a planner and then on to a supervisor. And so I've actually lived through the struggles that maintenance teams face day in and day out. And then after that, I moved on to work for a vibration reliability company and visited hundreds of customers and saw their hurdles as they try to improve plant uptime and reduce cost. And what I've learned over the years is there is no silver bullet, no magic box. But what we have learned is that some customers have been able to be successful, and that's kind of what we try to work with. Is in today's world of not having enough time and not having enough resources, we have to help customers as they on their journey to improve reliability.
Especially now. I mean, we've got to be able to keep that asset up and running and reliable, because we're going to depend on it going forward. As a side note, do you find companies that you interact with, are they still in this unusual phase we're in our life? Do you still find that companies are still engaged with their maintenance program, or has that sort of taken a back seat and sort of backed off a little bit?
Well, I think that all companies, especially any that are still doing the manufacturing, and if you think about it, there are so many different industries that just can't turn off the switch. If you think about power, if you think about wastewater, if you think about sure, there's a lot of restaurants that have closed down, but the rest of the world is still going and still working and still having these problems. And they had a lot of problems before, and now it's just worse because now they have even fewer people available to do the work. So it just seems to progressively get worse and worse.
I'm going to put my company hat on, and I realize that I need to do a better job. If I was, Acme Company, and I realize that I need to do a better job with my facility, it's going down too much, whatever the problem and pain point it is. How do you I want to do a reliability program. What do I do? How do I start?
Yeah. Well, the challenges are, over the years, it used to be years ago where, it's not like this is brand new. We've been doing reliability. We've been talking about this thing for 40 years. And a lot of companies, when I go out there and talk to people now, almost everybody has heard about it. It's not like reliability is unknown. It's not like predictive maintenance and condition-based maintenance. Everybody has heard about it, but most people have tried it and have failed. And only the companies that have a lot of resources or an industry that they have no choice, like, power or pharmaceutical or oil and gas, where the downtime is so incredibly expensive, they have no choice but to do it. Well, what's happening now is a lot of the companies like water and wastewater and facilities that for years have ignored reliability because they just couldn't afford it and didn't have the resources. Now everybody is saying, we just can't run plants the way we used to. We have to do things smarter. We can't be competitive if the plant is shutting down all the time.
But how do I get going? Here's one of the problems. You mentioned it. It's been around for a long time. Hey, we're a reliability company. We're going to be, we're going to go all in, and then change in management happens, and then all of a sudden it falls apart, and you're back to square one. And I think you're right. To some extent or another, companies have gone through a reliability initiative. Do you find people primarily in some companies just jaded by the fact that here it comes again, and we're going to fail again?
Yes, yes, yes. Well, I hear that all the time, and you go to visit a customer, and they go, "Oh, here we go again. It's the next round of doing something," and the problem is, everybody knows this is a good idea, and after you get the training on whatever technology or whatever new program you're coming into, and then you come back a year later and nobody has started it. Why? Because they're already way too busy with what they're doing, and they don't have the time to start trending for like vibration or thermography. Or everybody buys these tools and this equipment and has the best intentions, but then when the foreman doesn't give you the time to go out and start up a reliability program, nothing ever happens. You're right back to square one again.
And that asset, that tool, that diagnostic piece of equipment just sits in the cubicle and collects dust.
That's right. That's right. It's really kind of bad to say how many times you go back a year later and you say, "Hey, where's that tool that we sold you a year ago?" And they go back to the storeroom, open up a closet, and they show it to you. So what I have seen and what I've learned over the years is how have some companies been successful when others haven't? And it's not like I said before, there is no magic recipe. What it really boils down to, and we can take an example of this from the healthcare industry, and right now is kind of an excellent opportunity to do that. They have the same issue, the same problem, where they have millions of customers and they don't have enough specialists. And so that's the same thing in the maintenance world. We got way too many critical machines and not enough resources. So how do we do it? Well, how does the medical industry do it? Well, what they've learned is they've learned to use a tiered approach, where nurses with quick and simple tests learn to screen out what patients need to go see a doctor. And then the doctor is a general practice doctor who specializes in taking care of the few things like flus and colds and broken bones. And so that way you can screen out your issues or your problems at the lowest level without having to call in an expert. Because number one, we don't want to, and if you take this into the maintenance world, why don't we do the same thing? You know, there's no need to analyze a healthy machine. So the first thing we need to do is just use a quick, simple test like a nurse would do, you know, blood pressure, pulse, and temperature.
Right.
Let's find out what machines are good or bad, because if 80% of your machines are good, you know, you've knocked out 80% of the work. And so that's what you see is customers say, "I've got this new vibration tool and I've got 5,000 machines. What do I do?" Well, the problem is if you do the math, there's no way you're going to be able to do all 5,000 machines. So what you should do is find out which machines really need to be tested. And if it's a healthy machine, leave it alone. And so that's what the medical industry does. They find a way to screen out by using well care and nurses, and then they use general practice doctors, and then they use specialists. And we need to do the same thing in the maintenance world.
It doesn't sound like a big bang approach. I think there's a reasonable action to incrementally achieve those points of success. In that analogy, that it seems like that's the great thing.
Well, and over the years, and I have to say that I've trained countless, literally hundreds of new reliability programs with vibration and thermography and that kind of stuff. And they almost all have the same problem. And what we've learned is the successful customers know that the biggest problem is trying to start too big. You've got 5,000 machines, and you start setting up your machines. And then 3 months later, when the CEO says, how's that new reliability program coming? You say, well, shoot, we're still 20% into setting up the machines. It's still going to be months or years before we have any success. And the CEO says,
not a good answer.
Shut that thing down, take that money and go somewhere else. So the solution, the customers that are successful are those that have learned to start small and sometimes off the radar. You know, you don't want to do it when the CEO is breathing down your neck. Sometimes what you want to do is you want to go out and do a pilot, do a few machines, get some success, and then wave the flag like crazy saying, look what I did. I went out here and I did this and I proved, here's the success. And then all of a sudden managers go, well, holy cow, what if we gave you a little bit of money and a little bit of time? Look what more you could do.
Yeah.
And that's the only way to have a successful program is to start small and grow the program. And it kind of goes back to what you were saying, earlier in that, you know, it's the Big Bang thing. No, it's absolutely not. The only way to have a successful program is to start incrementally.
Ian, a couple of thoughts that come to mind. You're absolutely right. And I've seen it done as well. Big bang, incrementalism, that meaning, you know, through a sort of asset criticality rating, people know that I should be doing something on that asset. Just intuitively, like that pump is important. If that pump goes down, this section goes down or the facility goes on, I better pay attention to that asset. And intuitively, they know that, right? And in the world of business and finance, everybody wants to push back the cost of maintenance, push it down because it's a one for one. You know, if I spend a dollar up here on the financials, it's a dollar, you know, reduction down here. And it just makes more sense to be able to have that a reliability program. It just makes sense in light of those realities, especially today.
Well, you know, the funny thing was years ago, maintenance was seen as an expense, and everybody, all the maintenance and the plant managers would always say, that's just something we have to live with. We just, you know, we know we're going to have to spend so much money, you know, fixing things. But you know what teams are starting to realize? That, you know what, reliability shouldn't be seen as a cost. It should be seen as an investment. And if I can invest a little bit of money, and so that's why when I say start small and grow, if you show that reliability can save you some money, then now CEOs are starting to go into boardrooms and say, you know what, I heard about reliability. This is a way that we can invest some money. And we, you know, because if you keep putting on, more goals and more production with less resources and less time, there's no way that's going to be sustainable. So companies have to find a way to fix it. And the only way to fix it is not to keep doing things the way that you've been doing it. What's the definition of crazy, doing the same thing again and again and expecting the same results?
Yep.
It's just not going to work. So reliability is the way, technology has always been the way to get us out of problems, right? And so we've got to find a way, and we know this technology works. It's been proven. But the problem is making it sustainable. And what's happened in the past is a company will spend 2 or 3 years and get a reliability program going, and then they'll say, oh, we got a reliability program. And the CEO will say, oh, hey, you've got this great program going. Now let's take this money and put it somewhere else. That's the problem. The problem is reliability is not a destination. It's a journey. It's something that we have to invest in, and we've got to keep it going, because as soon as we stop doing reliability, we're going to go right back to where we were before. And if we don't document the saves, this new CEO that comes in is going to say, this reliability, there's a big dollar sign there that I can take and put somewhere else.
Oh, yeah.
They don't realize. So that's why, you have to document your saves, and it's something we have to keep going. That once you get this program going, you've got to keep it going.
You do, and it's a constant battle out there. Because your analogy, your example is exactly what happens. It seems like in every company, it's like there's churn, there's dollar figure. The other thing is that what I find, and I'm going to ask you a couple other questions. But the other thing is that, let's say you find inefficiencies out there and you've discovered them through your reliability program. And it's sort of like, man, that's low hanging fruit. Got it, man. Great value. Save some money. But over time, if you do your reliability program and you are committed to your reliability program, the dramatic financial results start to level off, right? Because you've already done it. But they don't see the overall efficiency of the asset itself. They just look at it and go, oh, I guess you've made it to your destination. We're really good. And then they shut it down.
Yes, yes. Yes. Well, and a lot of times what we find out too is that a lot of people freak out because they say, oh, you're going to replace me. You know, I'm not going to be needed anymore. Well, no, what we want to do is we want to take the time that you're out there doing mindless repairs, the emergency repairs that are sometimes not very safe, because it's been shown that when you've got when you've got an emergency and everybody, you go too fast and you make mistakes and you have safety issues. If we could have it instead that you were being more proactive, in that you were checking machines in advance, and then you're able to plan things in advance. And so instead of doing emergency repairs, you're doing planned repairs, and you're doing things where you're starting to design problems out of systems, it's a lot more easy to do, but it's a hard for that to do. And the problem, like I said earlier, is if you're already 100% busy, how do you ever start doing that trending? Because everybody says, I would love to do this trending to know the condition of my machines, because if I knew the true condition of my machine, like I said earlier, if you knew where the faults were, then you could go fix them. But the problem is you're already doing PMs and repairs. You don't have time to go do that trending. So again, the answer is start small and grow. So you just go out and do a few machines.
Yeah. See, that, I just love that. I love that approach. Get those victories, get them under your belt. Now, the other question I have is, there are a lot of diagnostic tools out there. IR, vibration, you name it, it's out there. You can't have that. There's not a silver bullet for that either. You're going to have the right piece of or a tool for the right job, right?
Yes, yes, yes. And that's exactly right. So if problem number one is starting too big, then problem number two is trying to use one tool to do everything. And like you said, it's kind of funny. Thermography is like the pet that everybody wants to grab. Why? Because thermography is fun. Thermography is easy. Yeah. And everybody says, oh yeah, I've got a thermal camera. It's in my storeroom and I never use it. And they said, but we've got a reliability program. Well, so the solution, what successful customers have learned, is before you start walking around and just taking thermal images of everything, you need to figure out what are your expected failure modes. Where are your problems? And if your problems are bearings and seals and misalignment and imbalance, those kind of problems, then thermography is too late in the game anyway. By the time, by the time the coupling and the bearings heat up, the damage is done. So in that case, you should have started with vibration, because vibration will give you 12 to 18 months worth of warning. By the time the engine is hot and the coupling is hot and the bearings are hot, the best you can do is shut that machine down and replace everything.
Yeah, so picking the right tool for the right job is very important. I agree with you. And one of the challenges that I had when I was managing a reliability program out in Arizona was the data.
Yes.
It's like a tsunami of data. And in that tsunami of data, there are the little you know, pieces of gold that you got to try to figure out where it is. But humanly, is it even possible? And I walked away. I remember going, there's no way. That's you know, data. What do we do with that?
Well, and that's a good thing. One of the analogies I like to use is the needle in a haystack, you know. And, you know, and the funny thing is a lot of people think if they just keep piling on more data, that'll help. Well, that's just making the haystack get bigger and bigger and bigger, and you never find the needle. So more data is not the answer. The answer is getting an answer out of that data, because I've seen a lot of programs, and that's one of the biggest ways that once you get a program going, okay, you started small, you've got a pilot going, you've got this program going, it's starting to show some success, you're using the right tools, things are rolling, and then next thing you know, the program went under. Well, why did it go under? Because everybody was getting all these numbers in and nobody knew what to do with it. A number doesn't mean a thing. If you can't get some useful information out of that, and if you can't make that number turn into a solution and fix something, then the data is actually worse than doing nothing, because, you know, having hundreds of trend lines and having hundreds of graphs that nobody knows what to do, you have to get an answer out of that. And another thing is, just having all this data, getting the answers, then you have to get the answer to the right person. And that right person, so it's all about communication. It's all about, you know, getting the information to your team. And in today's communication world, where we're talking to everybody, so why don't we just send this data, turn it into an answer, and get it to the right people? Because the planners need to make work orders, the managers need to approve it, the experts need to review it and say, oh yeah, there is something you need to do. So we need to not only just have the data and the tool and the technology, we also need to have the people all working together so that this whole thing jives and makes sense.
So again, it makes sense to have a targeted approach to get the program going that allows you to identify the right diagnostic equipment to have during that smaller, you know, approach. And then, of course, the ability to be able to look at the data in a very tactical way, mm-hmm. and without just, you know, getting overwhelmed right off the bat, because that once again, that's the challenge. It can be overwhelming, and you will fail across all options. But if you keep it in a manner, then you can incrementally grow it. And then the people making decisions and releasing the funds in the purse, well, then, hey, this is good. Okay, let's do a little bit. Let's do it. And then you can do it in a right way and a sustainable way.
Yes.
And at that point in time, it's all documented, you know?
That's right.
All right. Hey, John, are you active out there on LinkedIn?
I am. But you know what? I don't even I look at LinkedIn but you know what? I don't even know if I've looked at it for a couple of weeks now. But
well, you're riding you're on a boat that you got a slight preserver there, and your hair is flowing. And
yeah, that was off of Alaska. That was riding one of the Alaska Marine Highway fast survival boats. So I use that for my LinkedIn picture.
Well, you listeners out there, you'll just notice that he's just absolutely stunning in his looking. Anyway, reach out to him. He's definitely, you can, if you like what you hear what he has to say, I like his approach. I like the incrementalism. I like starting small and then proving and developing those victories. John's a man for you. John, thank you. Thank you very much for joining the Industrial Talk podcast. You listeners out there, stay tuned. We will be right back.
You're listening to the Industrial Talk Podcast Network.
Hey, again, thank you very much for joining the Industrial Talk podcast. That man is named John Burnett. That's B-E-R-N-E-T. Make him, and I mean make him, check his LinkedIn. Reach out to him. Mad Skills. He is with Fluke Reliability. All the information that you need to get a hold of him and the rest of the incredible team at Fluke Reliability will be out at industrialtalk.com. look for John's podcast, and you'll find everything that you need. So that's it. John Burnett, he is the man. And you know that we're here for you, the industrial professionals. We need to, more than ever, collaborate, innovate, and then have a call to action that makes sense. We're trying to compress the time, find the information that you need so that you're a success in this, whatever this post-COVID world looks like, okay? You've got to. You've got to collaborate because you don't have all the answers. Stay tuned to the Industrial Talk podcast because we're going to continue to have, we're starting a doggone roundtable on sales and strategies for this new era. So anyway, stay tuned to that. Be bold, be brave, dare greatly, change the world. That's what you guys are doing. Thank you very much. Stay tuned.